There we go. There we go. All right. Well, for those of you just joining in, this is the LHON Live call for December. As some, most of you know, we have this conference call the first Wednesday of every month. We haven't missed a month yet, so we're still going strong heading into the new year. And we usually have a guest speaker on these calls, somebody who can tell us their story about their LHON life and kind of how it's gone for them and maybe what they're doing now. You know, as they've grown through many years affected or maybe just a few years affected. We started this call a few years ago after the second LHON conference that we had in a way that we could get to know each other on a monthly basis on the phone. You know, we can do a lot through Facebook and emails and text messages and all that kind of stuff, but this was a chance for everyone to kind of get in one place and have conversation, bring up questions, bring up different topics. Again, listening to guest speakers that we have, pick up some new technology or whatever ends up, you know, organically grow on the call is what we're here for. We do have a few things we don't get into, and that is we don't talk about supplements, we don't talk about alternative treatments, we don't talk about clinical trials, we don't talk about anyone participating in the trials and what's going on. We're not doctors, we're not scientists, so myself and my co-host will not be able to answer any of those questions because we're not, you know, we don't have that kind of experience. So please, any medical questions, please feel free to contact your own medical physicians. My co-host is, one of them is not here tonight, Jessica, because she had a prior engagement, but I'm wondering if Andy's on the call. Is Andy, are you out here yet? He was actually going to be a little coming from work or something. So anyway, Andy will pop on when he does, but the other co-host is Andy Marks. So I guess I'm handling this all by myself. Shouldn't be a problem, right? No one's shocked about that. Anyway, what I'm going to do now, before I get into introducing our guest speaker, is I'm going to mute the call. And the reason we do this is because we want the call as quiet as possible so that we can all hear the guest speaker talk, you know, tell a story, talk, you know, tell us, you know, things that are going on without interruptions of, you know, toilets flushing, ice machines, you know, we've heard it all. So I'm going to quickly do that, and I will unmute the call when we're done speaking with John, and we can open it up for questions and conversation. We do want you to be able to ask questions and talk. So one second. I'm going to take care of that.
The conference has been muted.
Okay. John, if you're listening, hopefully you are, you're going to unmute yourself with *7, I believe. Make sure he gets unmuted so that he can actually speak. So,
can you hear me, Maria?
Oh, yay.
Oh, yeah, I did it.
Again, another moment that we hold our breath, making sure it all works out. Yes, I can hear you, John. Thank you so much. Everyone else is muted, so we have a nice, quiet platform. All right, so let me introduce our guest speaker for December. We're having John Walters on. John has been affected for about 20 years, and he lives in Huntsville, Alabama, and is currently a financial planner. He lives with his sweet dog, Stella, and his college sweetheart, who he married, Lori. And we spoke to John the other day, and he is thrilled to be here tonight, and we're really excited to hear his story and how it all began and kind of going through some of the trials and tribulations of gaining employment. And then we'd love to hear about your sweet dog, Stella, who is also losing her vision. So, John, can you kind of take us back and tell us how LHON began in your life?
Yes, and thanks, everybody, for having me. I really appreciate this. And I want to tell everybody, back 20, 21 years ago, I had nothing like this, an outlet to talk to anybody. So I think this is wonderful. I didn't know there was anybody, you know, really out there that had this. There's no way to find any back 20 years ago. But I guess it all started April. I was 20 years old, and I'll kind of make this short because everybody has the same, probably, you know, MRIs and spinal taps and all that. But it happened, my future wife, Lori, and another couple, we were going to New Orleans for Jazz Fest, and I just remember somebody's in Mississippi seeing the speed limit signs and couldn't really see them. And then we got down there and went to the Jazz Fest, and I remember walking down Bourbon Street and kind of noticing the neon signs were kind of blurry, and it could have been because of the drinking, but I think it was more the eyesight thing was going. So kind of went from there. That was April, May, June, July. I remember, well, back in May, I was in college, and that was kind of the end of the semester, and it got to the point where my professors, they had to blow up the test for me to take. I think one or two questions was on one page, but I was able to finish that semester, and then all the rest of it happened during the summertime when I went in school. I was landscaping or trying to, and, you know, everybody thought it was first, I think, a brain tumor. That was the MRI, diabetes, the MS, spinal tap. But when you're 20 years old, you think you're invincible. So I didn't know how bad all that stuff was. My mom and dad were freaking out. But I continued to lose vision, I guess, you know, 4 months. And I remember, I think it was probably around July, I got a, you know, they finally did the genetic testing and said it was this crazy genetic disease. And I remember being in the doctor's office, and the eye doctor, I remember I had one that said it was optic neuritis, and then he said, let me let you go to my fellow physician, and he can take a better look just to verify. And he looked at it and said, you've got some eye disease, and you're going to, you may go totally blind, never be able to drive again. And that really sucked, but I was really kind of worried about my mom and dad, how they're going to take it too, because I figured I can get through with it. But so that was April till July, August, and you know, figured out it was labors, and I wanted to go back to school. I had got in touch with Alabama Rehab. I'm from Huntsville, Alabama now, but I was in Florence at the University of North Alabama at the time, and they did some assessments before my fall semester, and I couldn't use Zentex. I guess my vision just wasn't good enough to do that, so they said I could use JAWS, which I couldn't even type my name on a keyboard, but end up using JAWS, probably version 2.0. I think it now it's probably getting close to 18 point something. That's how long ago it was. But I started using computer to help some, but I went back to UNA that fall semester and met with all my professors and said, hey, I've got to start sitting in the front of class. I got to tape record my classes. I can't see the chalkboard. You know, I don't even know if I'm in the right classroom right now, but I had to, you know, find out another way to go to school. And I was in a fraternity, so I didn't want to go off to, you know, school for the blind to learn how to adapt. I thought I could do it on my own. And I wanted to stay, you know, active with Lori, my wife now, and just everything that's going on in school. I didn't want to try to skip anything. And it was definitely a major learning curve. Because you went from seeing stuff to, you know, of course, everything's now audio. And back then, you had to have all your textbooks scanned. There was no PDF files or any way for, you know, getting an email with all your stuff where you could just JAWS read it. It was all scanned onto open book, and then it would read back. But that was, looking back, that was pretty antiquated, but that was one thing we had. But I went through, I was turning 21 July, you know, went back to school in the fall, and instead of it taking me 4 years to graduate, it took me 5, but I've got fraternity brothers that took 6 years, so I don't think that was really, you know, pretty much of a problem. But Alabama Rehab wanted me to maybe look at changing professions or degrees, maybe in social work with not so many numbers, and I was like, I want to be in marketing. I want to be a financial advisor. I know, you know, my vision's gone, but I know there's got to be a way to make this happen. So I stuck to what I was wanting to do, and had to get, you know, with financial management classes and all these numbers, I had to get all my professors or volunteers to read all my tests to me, which was fun where, you know, if you're in class, it would take you an hour or two to take a test, where it took me more like three. But,
John, did your tests, the tests you're taking being financial and marketing, I mean, that would have been a lot of numbers and things like that. That must have been really difficult.
Yeah, you had to, and I didn't even have a big calculator. Now I've got this gigantic calculator. I can't remember where we got it from. But I can kind of see it to do, you know, basic numbers. But a lot of this was just in my head where there was 40 people in the classroom and they were trying to figure out, you know, there's a so-and-so's price was $500. Now it's 30% off, but then you get some kind of rebate or, you know, a lot of math that people are doing. And I would say the right answer. Nobody has to speak up. And they're like, look, John can't even send a Blackboard and he's doing this. What are y'all, you know, what's your problem? So
that's pretty good. That's really good.
You know, you pay more attention, and I didn't skip any class. So I think, you know, when you're just listening, not focusing on anything else, I knew I had to pay attention. But,
you know, switching to audio, was that difficult when you go from visually looking at like a chalkboard, whiteboard, and then you had to switch to completely auditory? How was that?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was extremely anxious looking back because it's a small college. It's, I don't know how many people there, 5,000 or 6,000, but small versus, you know, University of Alabama, Auburn. So you knew all the people in your class, and, you know, the last semester I was perfectly fine. Now this semester I, you know, have to count how many doors. You go up to the third floor, count four doors, take a left, and pray to God you're not in the janitor's room and you're in a bathroom, and you're, you know, you sit down in your locked classroom. So that was there was a lot of anxiety, and, I mean, it was, looking back, it was pretty tough, and I'm not really a patient person, but you have to have some patience to
Did your fraternity brothers step in and help you out quite a bit?
They did. They would, and Lori would take me to class when she could, or one of my roommates or fraternity brothers. And I had some of them in the building, you know, and they would, but they didn't know how bad it was because nobody had dealt with anybody with any kind of visual problems. So it was kind of tough. Me telling them, hey, you got to say, hey, this is Chris or Jared, instead of just coming up and start talking to me.
Sure.
So, but it was a good support group for sure, though.
Great. Yeah. And so you got through college, got through, and you stuck with your major, which was business and marketing? Did you?
Yes.
Great.
And I think my grades were actually either a little bit higher than they were before this happened, but that may have been just having to concentrate and,
yeah,
you know,
turn into a good listener.
Right.
Yeah.
I did have one. I had statistics 1 and 2, and those are so many numbers where it didn't really pertain to what I was going to do now, but you had to take it just part of your degree. And this one professor I wanted to talk to, and I said, I need you to help me pass this course. I'm going to need you to help me, you know, with the test. And this was his last or second last semester, and I told him what happened to me, and he said, what if I just give you a C? I'm like, okay. So that was the end of that. But
yeah,
I still went
to
class.
You learned to pull the blind card early there, John.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
But that was his call, but that was
hey, awesome.
That was a blessing.
Yes. So you came around and you made it through college, and then it was time to pursue employment. So tell us how that started off for you.
Yeah, college was the easiest thing. After that, then you're in the real world, and back, you know, 20 or 19 years ago, trying to find a job in my profession, I looked on the paper, my mom did, we looked online, and there were several of these big financial firms that you've all heard of that were hiring, and I interviewed with every one of them, and some of them said no experience necessary, which that was totally up my alley. So Lori, she's a nurse. I was living in Huntsville where I am now, and I'll go on interviews, and Lori would go in there with me, and at first I'd go in and try to figure out where I was and not tell anybody that I was legally blind and do the interview. And I could, you know, look at people close enough to their eyes where they, you know, you can, they're not they don't know if you can see or not see. Mm-hmm. The interviews look great, and then they would be like, well, you need to fill out this application. So I'm like, well, I'm legally bond. I have to have my wife do this. And they would also have to do this aptitude test to see if you could pass the Series 7. So I had to get Lori to help me with it. And all of them, the same situation would happen where they're like, well, we're just not hiring now. We're not, you know, I'd make like a 95 on this test, which was meant I had no problem to pass the regular Series 7 test so I could be a financial advisor. But there'd be excuses after excuses, and I got terribly disappointed. You know, where my wife, our future wife, is working and making decent money, and I'm not making anything. So that was, I mean, I went through several interviews, and interviews at the same place two or three times, and then it got to where I just needed some kind of job. And I got one at this human resources division of this company here, and really didn't do much, but it seemed like it was easier to, when you interview, to tell somebody you had a job versus that you're still looking for one. Mm-hmm. So I did that for about 6 months, and I finally found this loan company that was hiring, and I did this on my own. Went up to the interview and told the guy straight up that, you know, I'm legally blind, but I know I can do this job. It's just cold calling, and as long as you have a computer that I can install my software, I can figure it out, because I could read Excel, and that's how the phone numbers come off, I think. Mm-hmm. So he hired me, and I was there for, I guess, 18 months, and that was actually something you could put on your resume, because it was kind of sales. So there, that guy kind of put his, you know, opened the door for me, but it was kind of funny. He hired me, and then, like, the first day I went to work, he got fired, so this new guy came in. I was like, oh my God, he's going to probably just let me go. But he didn't, but that was pretty fortunate. So they
kind of were that for the first, well, the HR, but they're the ones that said, you know what, come on in, we'll give you a chance.
The HR, that's kind of a friend of a friend that got me there. Not much money at all, but it was, I went every day and had a computer and did some work, but actually, I was looking for other jobs there, but
yeah.
It was a lot easier to be kind of in work mode, you know, at least.
Right. Like you said, having something on your resume was worth it right there.
Right. So that, and then the loan origination officer was really kind of, you had a little bit of salary, but it was more commissions, but it was something that the guys that I'm trying to interview with that to be a financial advisor see as a benefit, that like, hey, you can do this. So I did that for probably 18 months or close to, I guess, 2 years. And then I went back, and one of my friends said, you need to go talk to Benny Little at A.G. Edwards. It's not a firm anymore. It got bought out, but it's a kind of a regional financial advisory firm in the southeast. But I went over to interview with him, and I told him straight up, I'm legally blind. And he said, well, I can't not hire you because of that. And I said, well, heck, we're going somewhere now. So he was straight up with me. And
yeah,
I did everything I did before, and I passed everything. And he had to go interview with his boss in another city, and his boss said, like, hey, if Benny doesn't hire you, I'll hire you here in Florence. So I was not counting my chickens before they hatched, but it looked pretty positive. And I guess several months later, Benny called me, and he wanted my wife to come in, or she wasn't my wife yet, to come in. And he offered the job to me, and he wanted Lori to know. And so that was, he actually was the biggest influence for me to be where I am today, because if not for him, I don't know if I'd be where I am. Mm-hmm. And that was the easiest part, looking back, because then once you get accepted, then you're in a class with other financial advisors to be. I think there were 70 of us, and you have to pass your Series 7 and 6, and it's more like going back to college, so I hated that. There's tons of tests, and they had some of it where you could study online, so that was good. But I remember going to take the Series 7, it's about 8 hours. But if you're visually impaired, they'll give you 2 days to take it. But I had to have somebody read it to me. And there's tons of questions. If you don't pass this, then they'll fire you because they've already spent a good bit of money, like, kind of training you. And I went up there to the center and I had a guy reading it to me. And the guy, these tests are real long and the questions are long. And the guy reading them to me started falling asleep. I was like, dude, you gotta help me here. I know it's, you know, pretty long, but if you don't tell me the rest of the question, I can't answer it. And we got through it 2 days, and then back then, they had to send it off to get graded for me, but if you were spotted, you could just hit a button and the computer would pop out the results. But anyway, I passed that, and then you're basically on your own. Once you're set up, you've got to build your own book of business. And I remember the first couple months, I think I was making more money on SSI than I was, you know, with making at a real job.
Sure, trying to get established.
Right, and that's hard for anybody, even if you're sighted. So it was tough because you can't go driving around, you know, talking to people. You're more, everything was over the phone. And then if you had an appointment, it was, you know, I always tell people when I met with them, hey, I'm legally blind, but it was tough because the statements are hard to read and, you know, you get real, I guess, anxious, but
yeah.
I think it's more me, not them. But once you're, if you can talk the talk and they trust you, then that's, you know, half the battle.
Yeah.
There, so.
Yeah.
It's been tough. It was tons of rejection. But I knew I could do it. And, you know, the being legally blind is a terrible situation, but it didn't change my attitude or my mindset. It's just an obstacle you got to overcome. You know, I didn't want to be always want to be an airplane pilot or anything, so I knew that wasn't something that was a dead end at my job.
Well, I think it's awesome that you didn't, although people persuade, you know, thought you should change your, you know, career path, which I'm sure, you know, some of the guys and gals who are in, you know, beginning of college or even in high school, like, you better make some decisions on what you want to do, but you still pursued what you really, really felt was your, you know, your path. And, you know, there's, you know, commend you for that, because a lot of people probably would have just said, yeah, way too hard, I'm out. So how long have you been now doing financial advising on your own, as your own, you know, working with your current employer?
I've been there since 07, but I've been a financial advisor since 02, because I started right after I got back from, Lori and I got married, and right when we got back from the honeymoon, I started at age over. So after that, I've been on more of an independent small group since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, I think, Maria, we talked about, I live downtown, and my office is downtown. And the other, when I first started back in 02, that office was downtown as well, because I'm, most of the financial advisors or banks are more downtown. That's just where the center hub is. And so I'm real fortunate to be where I can walk home if I have to. I think the temperature is supposed to be 20 degrees tomorrow, so I probably won't be walking back and forth. But
yeah,
if I have to, I can. So it kind of helps when you're being independent.
Yeah.
And if somebody takes me home, it's not out of the way. My assistant, she's extremely, just does everything for me, but she takes me home, and it's no big deal to her, and I can actually, I really think she's telling the truth when she says that. And
that's great.
That's a big obstacle to definitely overcome, but I've kind of set myself up to be, you know, kind of local, not out some subdivision out, you know, 10 miles away or anything.
Well, you say you're close to work. Are you close to, you know, other things that you can walk to, you know, markets or restaurants and all of that? Is that all pretty close too?
Yeah, so I live on Randolph. Our church is on Randolph, the bars, restaurants. It's all sidewalks all the way down there. The square is right there. There's a grocery store, but I haven't gone there by myself. If I had to, I could, but...
Sure.
being married, and that's before I can help him with the grocery shopping at least.
What are you saying? The wife's got to do the grocery shopping? Come on.
Well, I just vacuumed the whole house, so I think she can.
Good, you do your share. I like it. Well, moving on a little bit, before we move on, what advice would you give to anybody that might be listening on, keep moving forward until you get that lucky break or that job that somebody actually says, well, I cannot hire you because you're blind. So, they put that hand down and say, welcome aboard. What advice would you give to somebody who may be in that situation, who's between jobs or trying to pursue a job? Can you, anything that kept you going?
I found, this is like, when I first started looking to be an advisor, I can't remember how I found this guy. He lives in Sioux City, Iowa, and Richard Crawford is his name. I think I got into NFB. Somehow they got me in touch with him, and he's totally blind, and he's been doing this for 30-something years back. I mean, he knows Braille. The thing about him, though, I think he was born blind, which, if you're born blind, then you just learn, you just do stuff. Because that's the only thing you know how. When you're 20 years old and it happens to you, it's a lot different. But he was the only person that I knew that had any kind of visual problems, and he was just about, I think, totally blind. He went through and did all this. He was a mentor to me, and I'm thinking, if this guy can do it and he's totally blind, then he's extremely successful. I think he's retired just in the last month or coming up. But I talked to him all throughout, and he was giving me encouragement and saying, I know you can do it. Just, give me pointers or suggestions. And so I think, he's a mentor, a cheerleader. I think finding somebody like that is huge.
Finding a mentor who's in the same field of where you're headed. Or even a mentor, that's not in the same field. It could be just somebody that's, visually impaired, blind, who is, working the corporate job, what you would like to be doing, and can, help you out with all those business tips and tricks and, interviews and don't give up. So finding a mentor, I think that's it's a great suggestion.
Yeah, and that was huge. And, nobody's going to give you anything. It's not their fault you're legally blind. And, it is the private sector, so they're looking at their, bottom line too, but you just have to stay positive and, give them reason to take a chance on you.
Yeah.
But I still talk to Richard. He calls me, or I call him every once in a while, and he asks me how I'm doing. And that's been a pretty long relationship, but that's a big benefit.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think you need when you become affected and become legally blind, I think it's really important to have legally blind role models, friends, mentors. I really feel it's important. Some folks don't, but I really feel that that it is, just like our community here. Now, you're doing pretty well. Lori's a nurse. You're doing this. What do you do on your off time, John? I know you have your sweet little Stella. Can you tell us a little more about her?
Yeah, probably everybody downtown thinks I'm Forrest Gump because I'm always out walking and talking. Most time it's in the morning, like today. But I have a standard poodle. I got her back in 08. And she's not a CNI dog, but the standard poodles are pretty tall. And they're really smart. And she got me, I was walking before, but with her, we were walking every day, and it kind of keeps me in shape. Also, work out when I get back, usually at night, 2 or 3 times a week. But with her, we do usually 3 miles, probably 4 miles today, but with their sidewalks, I've got it mapped out. I do the same, there's 2 routes I do. I know every step. I had to cross sometimes, it's probably 6 streets. They're not four-way stops, but early in the mornings there's not much traffic downtown, and I'm basically just here for them when I cross, and I guess my, whatever happens to me, if it's going to be bad, I'll probably get hit by a Toyota Prius or something. Well, I can't hear it coming.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
you know, that's been my routine for a number of years. But 2 years ago, this October, we started noticing Stella had some problems, like going down. We got some stairs to go down to her doggy door, and she was slipped down. And I'm like, and we had lights on, and we didn't know what the problem was. We thought maybe, I don't know, the stairs are too slick or she's getting too excited, but we had to take her to the vet for a yearly checkup. He's like, well, she's got cataracts. I was like, good grief. But we need to get them removed. And Auburn University is a huge veterinary school down here. And I called them, and they had told me how much it was. And I said, well, we can't go to Cancun this year. We're taking care of Stella. But we had a vet appointment with the eye doctor. And man, I felt like how I think my parents felt when they finally knew that I was diagnosed with labors. I know it's just a dog, but it's one of my best companions. And the vet looked and said, well, your dog's got a genetic eye disease, and she's going to go totally blind. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And
What are the odds, you know?
Yeah, like,
you would be hearing that news about your dog.
I'm like, you got it. I was like, that's just not making any sense. And Lori was in there with me, and I grabbed Stella and kind of stumbled outside and just started to bawl. I was like, this is, I felt like I was dealing with it all over again. And I was like, how am I going to walk with her? Because she's going to be totally blind. And she's, that's been 2 years ago, but there was probably 3 weeks where Lori was depressed, I was depressed, and then Stella was depressed because she's a dog. She's going to act like how we act, and she didn't really know what was going on. But one day she got her hair cut. She was all happy, and I was like, well, we're going to make this work. And I kept doing the same routes every day, and she quit leading all the time. Now she's kind of behind me, which is scary. It's definitely the blind leading the blind. But everybody in the neighborhood kind of knows the story, and I guess I stay out of her way because I walk about 4 miles an hour. I'm kind of booking it, but I tell her when to step down and step up, and we're making it. And she's got still some vision, but she's at night. Like, there's no way we can walk at night because she's totally got night blindness, and she can't find stairs.
So you walk with her every morning, and is that something that she gets excited for, but because of her vision, is she a little leery, or what's she like now?
She's ready to go. I'll get up and get a cup of coffee, and she goes to the stairs ready for me to get on my clothes. So we go out the doggy door, and she's ready to go. And she still likes it. She loves it. Of course, they can hear and smell a lot better than us, but it motivates me too. And I want to keep her routine, and hopefully when she's totally blind, she'll, keep going. But I know,
keeping her going too. You know, that's, you and I were talking about this. You're keeping her going as she's keeping you going with your normal, and that's her normal. And we've talked before on these calls about how important it is, when you're losing vision or you have a loved one losing vision, is to keep whatever normalcy you can, be it adaptive or whatnot. And you guys have been walking forever together, and you're, keeping each other's normal, which I think is just so cool. I just love that.
Yeah, and Lori goes with us some, but she has to be at work at 5:30 most mornings, so it's not where she's just kicking us out saying, you're on your own. But she knows I'm going to be fine. I mean, I've been doing this in the same neighborhood since 2002, so sometimes I feel like Frogger, crossing over, but I feel pretty confident.
That's funny. my gosh, that's awesome.
Like, this morning, I was walking, and I was going to the hill, and this car stops. I'm like, I don't know why they're stopping, but they're not supposed to. That's not normal where they were. So I said, somebody's going to ask me something. So I kind of slow down, and this guy rolls in his window, and he's like, how do I get to Governor's Drive? I'm like, I don't know where I am to tell him, but I was thinking, well, go down here, take a ride, and go down here, and you'll run into it. And I was like, I wouldn't take him down a one-way street, but I think I got to where I need to go.
Never thought about that, you know, yeah. The blind giving directions.
But I get directions, probably toss them off, it seems like. It's
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But.
Well, as you said, you you walk with Stella. Now, here's the big, always the big question. Do you have or use a cane?
I know where my cane is, but no.
you know where it is. That's step one. Step one, John. You know where it is.
When I've traveled by myself on the airport, I've had it and used it more to, you know, let people know or when I'm going to talk to somebody, but I do not use it. And I know it's probably to let other people know that I can't see, but the way I walk Stella with the leash, and I just feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, well, sometimes somebody will jump up on me, like when they're right in front of me, and I'll like, I'm sorry, but.
Well, you know, you obviously you've been dealing with this for, you know, like you said, 20 years, and you know, you just said one reason you use it is in a very busy, crowded airport, and that's an important place to use it for sure, and everyone has their why they use it, why they don't use it, but you know, every now and again, I like to ask this just to kind of get someone else's viewpoint on if they do or don't, but. You know, it's getting to, you know, kind of getting to the point here where I think we want to try and open up the call. John, thank you for, you know, telling us about your, you know, your employment journey and loved hearing about Stella and how you're continuing to walk, which I think is really, really cool. But what I'm going to do right now is invite you all to join in the conversation, or if you have a question for John, please feel free to ask, but even if you have just anything you want to talk about that doesn't relate to anything John said, we always, always encourage that as well, because it's your call, and this is why we do this every month. But so if anybody right now, I'm going to try this first, if anybody has any questions for John, you can go ahead and *6 your phone, and you can open up and unmute yourself and actually ask a question or make a comment. If that's hopefully easy enough for some of you.
Marie, it's actually going to be *7 for them to unmute.
Oh, I'm
this
so sorry.
Andy,
oh, and Andy's on, I'm sorry. Andy's on the phone. I was going to have you remute yourself. Thank you, Andy. Andy Marks is on the phone. He's one of my co-hosts, so thank you. *7. Sorry, guys. *7. I would have been silent for a long time. *7. And so if anyone would want to open up their phone, please feel free.
Okay, so I opened mine up. Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Kathleen.
Oh, yeah. You.
Great,
you know,
this is Kathleen.
Yeah. So I know Maria told me also, but is there a better way to, like, how do you tell change? Like, I have a problem with telling, like, pennies from, which nickels are easier because they're thicker, and quarters. Like, I feel so stupid because I'm still trying to work, and I take change to people and they're like, oh, this is a quarter, and I was like, oh, you know, like, I don't want them to know I'm legally blind because they will fire me, and that's my problem. I'm like trying to deal with money.
Does anyone have any money tips for Kathleen? You know, maybe I'll go ahead and unmute and see if it's quiet enough so that we can maybe get some more interaction, since, you know, we're kind of opening this up to everyone. So hold on. I'm going to go ahead and unmute. 1 second. Everyone hold tight.
The conference has been unmuted.
Okay, so the call is unmuted. And so if anyone has televisions in their background or anything like that, please, if you can mute them or turn them down. It seems pretty quiet right now. But if y'all heard, Kathleen's question was, how do you tell change? You know, quarters, dimes, nickels, pennies. Does anyone have any great tips for her besides, you know, we don't use change, but she does in her job?
I do. Yeah.
Look, dimes and quarters have ridges.
Yeah,
I mean,
the problem is that, you know, pennies and dimes are ridges, and then the quarters are bigger. You can figure it out pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, quarters are bigger, but dimes and nickels get confused to me.
You feel that the nickels are pretty thick, and the dimes are usually thinner. And then, of course, you can feel the riches on a dime with your fingernails, you know.
But dimes and pennies are almost the same, though. They have ridges both on, don't they?
No, not pennies. Pennies are smooth.
Okay.
Yeah, and the pennies are a little bit, the pennies are more of that brownish copper, you know, color. So, yeah.
Color is hard for me. That's why it's
yeah.
Yeah. But you can feel the pennies don't have ridges. Only nickel or dimes have the ridges in your fingernails. And
no.
Pennies are smooth.
Well,
dimes
but
and quarters. Dimes and quarters have ridges.
Okay, so dimes and quarters have ridges. Nickels are thicker and smooth, and pennies
yeah.
are smooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I can see where, you know, the size can be, you know, the dime and the penny might get a little bit close in size. Yeah, yeah.
But the dimes have ridges and the pennies don't.
It might be hard to figure out. If you're using it for your job, it's probably hard to figure it out quickly, you know, and that may be part of it, too, is
yes,
figuring
it
out it quickly.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
yeah.
Sometimes they'll put it, and I lie. Sometimes I feel bad. They're like, well, pick it out of my hand. I'm like, I don't have my contacts in. I just don't want to explain it to them. I'm like, no, I can't tell. You hand it to me. And
yeah.
I just said,
yeah. Well,
yeah.
I think some of us have all used the, I don't have my glasses, I don't have my contacts at times, just to kind of get through a little situation. Yeah, yeah.
So pennies don't have the ridges either. So only dimes and quarters.
Quarters.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good.
All right.
That's easy.
Try the ridge test. There we go. There we go.
Just
good,
don't keep your
good.
Keep your fingernails a little length. Don't keep your fingernails too short. Leave some
fingernails, but yeah.
There you go. And that's from our resident techie, Jim McCroy. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
good.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Please, anyone
nope.
else? You're all unmuted, so please feel free to bring anything up. Or if you have, like I said, a question for John, please, you know, it's your turn.
I'd like, this is Jim McCroy. I'd like to say thank you, John, for telling your story. I'm proud of you for pursuing, you know, what you want to do for a job. You know, my story is somewhat similar to yours. I got LA 28 years ago and so forth. I even have a, well, I had a dog. I had a Great Dane, and she was a smaller Great Dane. We started taking her for walks, and before long, she just kind of knew I couldn't see well, and we just bonded, but she passed away last year of cancer, but I had her for 8 years. But,
oh, man.
So it was a very, very similar situation. I work in IT, it's project management area. But what gets me is on Facebook, there are so many people. There are other groups that I'm in, the people that are blind, visually impaired networks on Facebook. And many people sit there and say, you know, they might be 22 years old and they're visually impaired, legally blind. They say, what jobs can a blind person do? Anybody got any ideas what kind of jobs I can do? And I reply to them on Facebook, don't ask what jobs can a blind or visually impaired person do. Do what you want to do. What do you want to do? Obviously, you can't be an Uber driver, but I know a lawyer in Detroit. He's a lawyer, and he's totally blind. And I know one guy in Texas. He's a psychiatrist, and he's totally blind. So you can do anything you want. It's yourself. And there are people, computer programmers, financial analysts, whatever you want. And so I really upset with people who say, what job can a blind person do? No, what job do you want to do? Anything you want to do, except probably as Uber driver.
Yeah.
And I'm glad
yeah,
you
right.
pursued that. Thank you.
I totally agree. I mean, you got to kind of get off your pity party. Everybody was depressed when it happens to you.
Yep.
But if you still have that drive, it didn't change your personality or your what you want to do. You know, your... And it did me. I mean, I had to just figure out there's a way to do what you want to do. And I wanted to try to be as successful as I could be. And, I mean, I don't think Lori would want me sitting at home or, you know, I didn't want to sit at home or, you know, that's just depressing. And so, it was extremely tough. I mean, I'm looking back now and I'm still always trying to build my book of business, but there were some extremely tough years. But it's tough for people that have 20/20 vision. I think I was telling y'all, I had 70-something people in my class. I bet half of them were gone within the first 6 months, and now, 13, 14 years later, I bet there's 12 of us out of 70 are still doing this. And it's not because the rest of them didn't want to. It's just it's tough for anybody. So it is kind of stacked against you, but the technology is so great now. And if you can find somebody that's done something similar, then you can ask them, well, how'd you do this? And it's a great opportunity. And I know there's other people who have done what you're trying to do, be it with psychiatry or IT or what I'm doing, and attorney, just try to find that network.
Now, has anybody had the injection besides me, or what?
Kathleen, we don't really talk about the clinical trials on these calls.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, we don't get into all of that, really. It's just really for conversation. Not that it hasn't been asked before, it has. But we don't really get into who's injected and what's their eyesight like and all of that. There are other people, on the call that have had injections, but we can't go into it there.
Okay.
But no problem. John, I do like what you said is finding somebody who's doing what you're doing and ask them how they got there, kind of a thing. And then adjust and adapt it to what you're going to be able to do. And Jim's, his comment of, ask what do you want to do, and then figure out how you're going to get there and do it. It's not going to be easy. Like John said, some things get stacked against you. But isn't it, success will be so much sweeter, the harder the journey. So, it's worth it in the long run, hopefully. So does anyone else have any other questions, just comments, anything about the upcoming holidays or anything of that like that?
I wanted to ask John. This is Lance. I want to thank you for telling your story. It's a good story, inspiring. But I was kind of perked up when I heard you talking about walking at 4 miles an hour without a cane. And so I suspect you can see a little bit more than I can. I really miss traveling on foot, which I used to do a lot of. I still walk a little bit, but tell me a little bit about how you truck along so quickly without a cane. My vision, best way I can describe what I can still see is with my cane, I will usually see a car parked on the side of the road just like right before I run into it. So that's the best way I can describe, what I can still see, but I'm just interested.
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit better than you. I think I told Maria one time, but I can see better when it's real cloudy, like in the mornings or the evenings. I don't know if that's like everybody, but it's sunny outside, it's worse. But one time I decided I thought I could jog, and it was the day that we have green garbage cans out on the side of the street. And I was on the street, and I was going faster than I should, and I ran right into one. Thank God it was empty. But I mean, I'm kind of a little bit of I don't know if I'm a daredevil, but I keep, if it's the leaves are out right now, and that's hard because the sidewalk and the leaves, I can't tell there's in the sidewalk and the ground because the leaves are kind of obscuring that. But I kind of look down, and I can see the different color from the sidewalk and the ground. And Stella is usually, now she's behind me, but if she's behind me, she's not going to hear anything now. There are times like when there's a bicycle, some kids left out, which she thought was no big deal. It's a big deal to me. We've had a bad storm here. There were some tornadoes around us, but not right on me, but some tree limbs were down the other day. Stella hit it before me, but she just stopped, and I reached down, and the limb was about as big as a Coke can, and I moved it out of the way. But I think a lot of it's memorization where I am, but if you put me out in another city, then I couldn't go that fast. And I know in the mornings, there's this one lady, I don't know if she stuck up, but I was with Lori, the other day, and she didn't say hi to her either, so maybe she's just mad at both of us. But she gets out of the way and gets off the sidewalk with her dog. But the other people, they say, hey, John, it's Lindsay, or hey, John, it's whoever. They know me over the years. But I've got this one loop I do is 1 mile, pretty hilly, and then the other one I go downtown. And if there's construction going on, if there's a leaf blower, and I have to cross the street that's not a four-way stop, and I don't go that way. I try to go to another place where it's, I can't hear the leaf blower or it's a four-way stop to kind of get around that. I mean, I do a lot by just hearing the traffic. If it's kind of early in the morning and the people have their headlights on, I can see that perception kind of toward me. But I've got one street to cross real soon, and after that, there's not that many streets. It's just sidewalk. But I think a lot of times I've walked with Lori over the years. Then I've done this, you know, almost every day. Every day of the week, and I've kind of got memorized. And then that's part of it.
So you have a route. You have your routes. You're there. They're memorized. You know the streets pretty well. Is probably the key to doing a little speed walk, because it, you know, as people say, like, I could do this with my eyes closed. Oh ha! But yeah, you probably could, you know. But obviously, you know. Safety first, right? Safety first. And, of course, we always advise orientation and mobility training, because getting across the street is a big deal. And I've had training. I still won't cross the street, by myself. But, that is key. Or creating a route that you don't have to cross busy streets, which would be, an idea to do as well. Some people, like John, you said you have a 1 mile loop, maybe you do the easy 1 mile loop like 3 times,
I do that, and people are like, I just saw you. I'm like, yeah, I can't go anywhere else,
there you go. It's like you with the vision, it's not like you're really looking at the scenery all that much. So, Lance, do you have an area that you could walk and, kind of get to know a route anywhere where you live?
Yeah, I mean, I have a route that I've got memorized, but I'm pretty new at this. I just, I was riding a bicycle about 7 months ago, and so I started walking instead. I almost ran into something on my bike or kind of sideswiped it, and so I started walking, doing a 5 mile loop. I live in a semi-rural area, and I was doing that for months, and then it just got to the point where I really wasn't using my vision to walk anymore. And this was before I got the cane, and I was just, feeling the edge of the road with my feet. And I don't know, I was crossing, a side street was going off to the right. And instead of just continuing down my street, I somehow veered off to the other side of the road. And next thing you know, I didn't know which way I was going. And
Lance, do you have sidewalks where you live?
What's that?
Do you have sidewalks where you live?
No.
Yeah, that's a huge difference, because I can tell when I'm off the sidewalk if I get on the street, because you just feel the difference. I mean, it's just concrete versus asphalt, and I think that's more of where I am versus where you are with the being able to recognize and be able to be on the sidewalk knowing hopefully cars aren't going to pop up against you.
Plus, do you have a dog also? And I don't mean a seeing eye dog. It's just like John has and I have. If you have a dog as a pet, they kind of, after a while, kind of help you as well.
Right. I'm not completely immobile. I was up in Indianapolis, able to move out there. Mile out, mile back on a paved walkway. So, but all options are open.
So hold on real quick, because Lance, we can't hear you that well. Somebody has like a television on. If you have any kind of. There, it's quieter now. Thank you.
Okay, well, it's definitely not me. I was going to say it was hard for me to hear, too.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to jump in. It gets a little loud. But Lance, you were saying. That you, I don't know, we couldn't really hear your response But, you know, having roads or, you know, even like dirt paths, that kind of thing, you know, it would be more difficult to really, you know, get that, you know, heart pumping walk going on for sure. One of the things some people do is they, you know, they get a friend involved who act, you know, who would be a guide, per se, you know, if that's available to you, a buddy who could be your guide and walk with you, that is another option. That's how all of our runners, most of the runners use guides, and, you know, that works very well for a lot of folks, too. So, you know, but that may not be available.
But I said, that's where I think a dog helps, because dogs don't just go off into the middle of the street. They will stay on the sidewalk or on the edge of the road. They didn't actually do that. It's natural
yeah.
for them. They're not.
Not
my.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
no.
You know what? That's awesome.
Go ahead.
What I was just going to mention has happened to me a number of times is just walking in the parking lot into the grocery store sometimes, things like that. I'll just, like, step up. Wife goes, what was that? And I says, well, there's a step there. Well, I thought it was, because when you have the white concrete and then you have the black asphalt,
yeah.
I can't tell if it's a step or not, but actually it's not a step, but I think it is, so I'm stepping
yeah.
up and like, what was that?
Yeah, I think we all do that.
Yeah. Like a big show pony, you know, you know, with a big step
yeah,
and
exactly.
gallop over. Yeah,
oh,
exactly,
God.
Exactly.
Or try to step down when there's no step.
Yeah, or exactly, either way, both up and down, for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, that's funny. Or when it has the curb cut and you're like, is it a step? And you're, you come down really hard because you've hit the curb cut there. But a lot of times they have the yellow bumpy plates in. So that yellow
like that.
Is pretty bright. Yeah,
but
that works pretty well.
You can't see the yellow that well. So.
You can't see the what?
It's a yellow.
It's, you know, they're pretty bright. I mean, you can't see it all the time, but sometimes it can depend, like John was saying, on the lighting of that particular day. Is it darker? Is it really bright? You know, a lot of times the lighting makes a difference, but, you know, or if you even have a cane, you know, you're going over that, you can feel the bumps with your cane. It makes a really strange sound, like you're trying to play an instrument or something, but they're pretty bright. And again, different places that we live, they could be a little bit, dimmer or less bright, you know, I suppose. But really quick, I want to interject here because I don't want to forget to say this,
okay.
But we have some athletes that I need to give shout-outs to, and I don't know if any of them are on the line, but if they listen to this, last weekend was the California International Marathon in Sacramento,
and
we had three, and maybe more, but I just know the three, gentlemen with LHON that ran in the men's VI division, and wouldn't you know, first place, second place, and third place were taken by three guys with LHON. So we had Chaz Davis, we had Adrian Broca, and we had Matt and Rajam, if I said that right, Rajam. They took the whole podium, first, second, and third. LHON represented and dominated
wow.
the podium last weekend. So isn't that cool? I just love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I know. So really a proud moment for our community for sure. And it was Chaz's first full marathon, I believe. So, and Adrian, he does triathlons. He's been an athlete for a long time, and Matt's been a runner for a long time, too. But so anyway, really a special day for not only for these athletes and their families cheering them on, but also for our community. So I wanted to mention that. It's super cool. I love that.
Just to pile on how great it was. I mean, not only was it Chaz's first full marathon, he, like, smashed the national record for VI marathons. He did amazing. And Matt Rajam, who placed second, yeah, he broke a three-hour marathon for the first time ever. So he was really pleased with his result. And then, like you said, Adrian Broca, who was actually – he was featured in Runner's World right around the time Jeremy lost vision eight years ago. So he's been a runner quite some time now. And like you said, he's advanced the triathlon. So, yeah, we've got some really amazing athletes in the group.
Well, good for them.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. I thought his time seemed like he did smash it. Yeah, I mean, I think he was even surprised.
he was like a half an hour. He was like a half an hour ahead of the next person after him. That was Matt, and he's an amazing runner himself. And I think he placed, Chaz placed like 42nd or 43rd out of about 6,200 participants overall. This isn't obviously just the eye, but 42 or 43 overall. And it's like the first 30 or 40 were all in the elite classification, and boom, he's like, he's right up there. It was an amazing performance.
That's awesome.
And now he's back at the Colorado Center for the Blind, which is where he's, you know, he graduated last year, and now he's training blind skills and cooking and doing stuff like, you know, learning his blind school skills before he goes on to get his master's. But, yeah, amazing, amazing group of people.
Yeah, yeah. Would love to hear, maybe we can do it when Chaz completes the Colorado Center for the Blind. Would love to hear about his experience there. Because we do get asked sometimes about the different schools and what they're about and what they learn. So maybe that would be in the future. Well, listen, we're heading right into our one-hour mark, and not that we have to stop the call, but what we do right about now is that we do stop the recording, and we then have kind of a after the call, if you will, where you can speak up if you hadn't already, and you can ask something that maybe you didn't want to ask while we were recording. All right, so feel free to stay in the line. We will hang on tight, and I hope John can hang on a little bit longer, again, to have some more conversation. But first I want to thank John Walters for being on tonight's call and sharing his story and even sharing your struggle with, you know, gaining employment and pursuing the path that you, you know, never veered from, which I think is awesome. And I think, you know, the folks have already said that. And, you know, I love how you and Stella keep each other's normal every morning. I think that's really cool. So thank you, John, for being on tonight's call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great. Next call is going to be in January, and I believe that's going to be, I'm going to say January 4th. I'm trying to think out loud.
That's right.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrea. Yeah. Thank you. January 4th, and it will be same time, same place, all of that good stuff, so mark your calendar for that. Also, quick shout-out about with 2017 right around the corner, which means we will be having our next LHON conference, which is going to be in the Washington, D.C. area, June 30th, I believe. But we always all kind of come in the day before because we have a meet and greet with the LHON community, usually the afternoon, evening before the conference. So there will be lots of details about the conference coming out in the next few months, but it's something that we encourage you to look into trying to get to. It's really fabulous. It's a full day of LHON education, stories, but most of all is meeting other people in the community face-to-face. person-to-person, as we would say now. But anyway, it is a wonderful, wonderful experience, and we'll definitely be having some folks give their testimonials about their experiences on maybe some later calls. So right now I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording. So if you all hang on, if you can, again, the call is done, and we appreciate everyone who's called in for this month, and we will see you all in January. But I'm going to go ahead and stop recording, and feel free to hang on. So give me 2 seconds here.
While she's doing that, if anyone's making plans for the conference, know that we do Day on the Hill in D.C. So on the Thursday, the day before the conference, if anyone's going to D.C. and wants to help lobby